Welcome to Energy Stew. This is Peter Roth, your host. And we're leaping again. Yes, leaping into spiritual awakening like we did last week. And we're going to wake up some more. So to help us do that is the author of the book, The Leap, The Psychology of Spiritual Awakening, Steve Taylor. Steve, welcome back to Energy Stew.
Hi, Peter. It's good to be back.
I'm so glad that we could talk again because this is, I think this is a very complicated understanding of what awakening is. It's about being awake in a world that's mostly asleep.
Mm.
And somehow we have to, you know, run a zigzag course through through all these barriers and obstacles and traps in the world right now that are going on, that, you know, it's a like a minefield of interesting, not always nice or friendly obstacles that can get us, you know, off the wheel, is one way of saying it, I guess, and distract us from who we might know we are in a larger context of being awake. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I think one of the challenges is, you know, we live in a culture, you're in America, I'm in Europe, pretty similar capitalist, individualistic cultures. So we live in cultures which don't really support the values of wakefulness. You know, wakefulness is about authenticity, it's about altruism, it's about non-materialism, it's about finding well-being within yourself rather than finding well-being through accumulating possessions or accumulating power or success and so forth. So wakefulness is quite strongly opposed to the values of our cultures. And so often when we, particularly when people develop wakefulness quite suddenly, and if they don't have a background in spiritual traditions or spiritual practices, then they can feel quite confused because they undergo a shift in values, and their values are suddenly opposed to the values of their culture, suddenly opposed to the values of the people around them, you know, their families, their friends. And it can lead to, you know, a sense of disorientation, maybe even alienation. I think in my own case, I was, I think of myself as a naturally awake person. You know, I didn't do anything or I didn't follow spiritual practices in order to be awakened, but it just seemed to be inside me from when I was 17 years old. But it was still quite difficult for me because I didn't know anything about spirituality. My family didn't know anything about spirituality. And my environment was encouraging me to live a materialistic, consumerist lifestyle and so forth, to find happiness from having fun and doing well and having possessions and so forth. So there was a definite sort of dissonance there between my own state and my wider culture. And it took me certainly several years to overcome that.
Well, I think there has to be some kind of a middle ground. I live in New York City, and it's a very materialistic place. And I live in a very fortunately nice apartment. It's rent stabilized. And so I've been taken care of. And I remember being in a workshop about 25 years ago where there was, I definitely had a very strong awakening in that. Not that I think I had been awake since my 20s, at least. And yet, I didn't understand it. I just didn't feel, you know, so limited spiritually. And could see things from a larger context of spirituality. And then 25 years ago, I was in this very advanced workshop with a very advanced trainer who was able to lead us into incredible experiences. And he made it clear that life will never be the same for us again, that we won't have time for the small stuff, you know, we won't be able to indulge in the materiality of the world the same way anymore. And that was totally understandable. And yet, you know, I still don't indulge in the need for material gratification so much as survival. And nice survival, because I think, you know, the three essences of evolution are truth, beauty, and goodness. And so maybe being awake has to do with truth and goodness, but we also have to really appreciate beauty and live in beauty in this world as much as we can. And so I don't see that we, in spirituality, that an awakening, that we need to be homeless, or not that some people aren't willing to do that, but that we don't need to rid ourselves of everything. And I know some people who have done that, who have all of a sudden woken up and said, I don't want this material life anymore. I'm going to give up everything and just live, you know, in the world, in my spiritual essence. And it's very hard to do that. And in many cases, people really fail at not wanting to have some material comforts in life.
Yeah, I mean, why should we do that? Why should we, you know, we have to treat our bodies with respect.
Right.
We have to treat our minds with respect.
I think that we have to have beautiful bodies and live in a beautiful environment. It could be just pure nature. And it could be a simple hut in the woods if, to us, that feels beautiful.
Yeah, that's true. But I think one of the dangers of spirituality, you know, and certainly in some spiritual traditions, which are quite dualistic and can be seen to be quite world-rejecting, maybe certain kinds of Christianity, certain kinds of Buddhism, they sometimes have a negative attitude to the body and to the material world. So, you know, Christianity sometimes has the notion of the spirit and the flesh, and you have to stop the flesh overcoming the spirit, and the spirit has to overcome the flesh, and vice versa. And that can lead to kind of asceticism. You know, it can lead to the neglect of the body. It can lead to indifference to the material world. It can lead to indifference to social problems and global problems. So that's when spirituality sort of teeters too far towards world rejection. And, you know, I think the most balanced and integrated spirituality has a great deal of reverence for the body and a great deal of reverence for the material world, because in essence, what is the material world? It's spirit. And what is the body? The body is spirit. You can't really make a division between spirit and the body.
Right. And so the idea is to eliminate dogma of spirituality. And, you know, because these are rules, spiritual rules, that becomes dogma. And perhaps we just really need to live in a natural sense of universality that can embrace many things, but see it as part of the greater whole and divinely ordered.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, dualism is always dangerous in any form. So I guess the basic principle of all spiritual traditions is to transcend duality between the human being and the world, between the individual and the world. So it's to transcend the boundary which seems to enclose us within our personal space, and which seems to mean that the world is out there on the other side of our minds and the other side of our bodies. So that's the basic principle of spirituality. But also, spirituality means transcending any sense of duality between the spirit and the body, or between the spirit and the material world. So I'm always a bit distrustful of spiritual traditions which say that the world is an illusion, and or that everything is perfect, you know, because in essence, reality is bliss, and therefore what happens in the world, even if it seems to be full of turmoil, full of suffering, it's still perfect, because everything in essence is perfect. So I'm always a bit distrustful of that. I think sometimes when people proclaim that the world is an illusion, It's a kind of an easy escape from responsibility. It's kind of an escape into spiritual bypassing.
Yeah, I like that understanding. And that has a lot to do with emotions, too, because there are a lot of spiritual people who think we shouldn't be emotional.
Ooh.
And yet I really believe that our emotions can be very spiritual. there's a soul richness to living in emotional depth, yet knowing better. So it's still is being awake, being conscious, and feeling, you know, the kind of the juiciness of being in this life, because we are here, and yet knowing that, you know, we're of a greater place, a greater universality of self, that is much more integrated in everything. And that's why, you know, we it's good to learn how to communicate with nature and find empathy with animals and really live a larger life and full with fullness and richness to it, rather than thinking, you know, spiritual awakeness is really just to meditate a lot and to separate oneself from this reality.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that spiritual awakening should inform every aspect of life. You know, it should inform our relationships, our jobs, the way we bring up our children, the way we speak to people on the street or in shops, you know, the way we fraternize with our friends. Every, you know, you can't separate spirituality from ordinary life. It should imbue ordinary life.
Right. And love that.
Yeah. I think you know, it's, in some ways, it's very easy to be a monk. It's probably
well, I the work of Thomas Merton, for instance, who was a very strict monk for a while, but he also lived a very lascivious lifestyle for a while also.
Yeah.
So he kind of went back and forth and, you know, and was able to have the perspective of both. And there are times when escaping feels good.
Yeah, yeah.
And other times we really, I think, just need to fulfill other aspects of ourselves. But I guess that's a lot of awakening also, is to understand the journey of self and to allow it to manifest, and being aware at the same time of our larger nature amidst, you know, the intricacies of life and all of the things that you were just talking about, doing it right. And by right, I mean, you know, just being conscious.
Yeah, and having a sense that you're not just an individual, that your identity stretches out beyond your own mind-body complex. And I think in some ways, spiritual awakening can be seen as an expansion of identity. You know, so you don't necessarily lose your identity, but you expand your identity, so you become more than your brain, more than your body. You become part of nature. You become part of the human community. You become part of the whole universe. So your identity expands wider and wider.
Right, and there are people who have very strong awakenings that clearly see that.
Mm.
And, you know, and yet you can't really contain it. You can't hold it in this world ongoingly. You can remember it and treasure it, and occasionally revisit it. But having the experience, I think, is all it takes to know better.
Yeah, and I think it can always be in the background as well. I mean, people sometimes think that you can't be, you know, you can't live in a continual state of spiritual awakening because, you know, how would you drive a car? How would you pay the bills? How would you cook a meal? In a state of ecstasy, in a state of unification with the universe. But it's important to remember that to be spiritually awakened doesn't mean that you continually experience unity with the universe. It doesn't mean that you continually experience ecstasy. It just means that those things are always there in the background. They're part of your being, part of your nature. But if you want to, you can focus your attention away from them, and you can narrow your attention down to tasks which need to be done, to people you need to speak to, and so forth. So you still have a control over your attention. So if you need to, you can still be practical, and you can still function in the world.
Yes, and it's not always easy. I mean, we bump into health issues, for instance, where we really, you know, are disabled for a while, and but that shouldn't interfere with our larger sense. But it does give us time to think about it, and you know, so there are many different ways that we are challenged in life to hold our inner truths and our, you know, our realizations, but we keep coming back to it. And, you know, to know ourselves in that larger context. And it's humbling. And I think being accepting that humility, I think, is really important.
That's right. Yeah, there's a paradox in a way, because you realize that you are, in a sense, you are the universe. You are everything. You become part of everything. But also, you realize that your own self, your own personality, is not really significant. Your own life is not really significant. What's significant is maybe the contribution you can make to the human race or to the whole world. But at the same time, you realize that you're just a passing form. You know, I think when people try to become rich and successful and powerful, they're really trying to defeat death in a way. They're trying to make themselves so powerful, so strong, so big that they can't die.
But yeah, it's a sense of immortality.
Yeah, it's like the pharaohs who would build massive pyramids to try and defeat death. You know, if you get somebody like your present president or, you know, media moguls, they try to make themselves so powerful that they can resist their own mortality. But when you attain some degree of spiritual development, you accept that you're just a passing form. You know, your life is just a wave. And the wave slowly builds up, it takes form, it manifests itself, and slowly it begins to fade away and dissolve, and then it becomes part of the ocean. But you accept that you're just...
Well, our consciousness... I don't believe our consciousness ever dies. We just become... The form around it changes. And so that's where, you know, that larger sense of self comes in, because we're bigger than this life and whatever our troubles are in this life, because life is infinite, and this life is such a drop in the bucket compared to the, you know, eternal nature of our own souls and of our own awakeness through a huge past and future.
Yeah. And life also has infinite manifestations and infinite variation. So the life inside me is also part of the life inside you, and part of the life of billions of human beings around the world. So, you know, when I die, you know, life will continue. I will continue, because life will become manifest in other forms, and I will be part of the manifestation of life in other forms.
Yeah. Well, you will be another form, but you'll still be self-aware. And I don't think we lose that sense of self. It just morphs into some other way of identifying our oneness and in our uniqueness amidst the oneness.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know the poem by Walt Whitman, Crossing Brooklyn Ferry? Do you know that poem?
No.
No, it's a really wonderful poem, because he's crossing the ferry. He describes crossing the ferry from Manhattan to Brooklyn, I think. And he has this sense that millions of human beings will cross over the ferry in the future. And he describes that he is one with them in the future. He speaks to us in the future and says, I'm here with you now in the future. You are here with me now in the past, and we are one. And in the future there'll be infinite generations of human beings who will pass over this river, and they are always here, and I am always there. So it's a really beautiful poem. It projects this sense that he is eternal.
Well, I think what it is that everything in reality is recorded in the universal computer. Every moment in time is a record that always exists. We don't have to pay attention to it anymore, but just to know that it in itself is, is established. And so every moment is something that we can recall, for instance, if it's in our lives, even if our mind can't, if we're hypnotized and go into regression, we can pick up incredible details of the past. And so just to see ourselves in this larger context is beautiful. But I want to come back to this sense of being on a spiritual path is very humbling. And I know that you talk about spiritual leaders and what they teach and how tricky that can be.
I think there's an issue sometimes with spiritual teachings are so unregulated. Anybody can set themselves up as a spiritual teacher and proclaim that they are enlightened, and they can put themselves on the internet with a Facebook page and a website, and they can accumulate followers. And I'm not saying that spirituality should be regulated. That would be very difficult to do. But it means that there are quite a few narcissistic, exploitative spiritual teachers who are not genuinely awakened. And also, many people they want to be with a guru. They want to be disciples of a guru. They enjoy the feeling of being with a kind of father figure or a mother figure.
And also being given rules.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of these teachers have rules. If you're, be on a spiritual path, this is how you have to behave, and these are the rituals you need to perform every day.
Yeah, and that can be, that can provide a structure, that can provide a sense of purpose and meaning. But I think one of the problems is that, there are some spiritual teachers who maybe are genuinely awakened, or at least were in the beginning, but they become corrupted to some degree by the role of being a spiritual teacher, because of the admiration of their followers.
Yeah, the power.
The power, yeah. I mean, power corrupts in politics, and power corrupts in spirituality too.
Yeah, interesting. So I think it's really important for each person on a spiritual journey to be present in their own spirituality, in their own awakenedness, and treasure that. And then whatever it leads to, I mean, we each have different inner truths that we have to follow, different purposes, and different limitations, too, that we have to respect and be aware of, and not always like, but we each have our own ways that we perform that other people might not agree with.
Yeah, I think many people believe that when you become spiritually awakened, you should become a perfect being. You become incapable of feeling any negative emotions, incapable of harming anybody, incapable of having any negative thoughts. You become a perfect being. But almost never happens like that. No, spiritually awakened people are very rarely perfect beings. They're maybe more perfect than they were before, but they're not completely free of discord. And, life doesn't always become completely easy. There can still be challenges. There can still be situations which cause some upset and imbalance. So I think many people are disappointed when they become awakened. They think, maybe I'm not genuinely awakened after all. But, I think that's one of the great myths about spiritual awakening, that it does lead to complete perfection.
Right. And so I think it's really valuable to read your book and to understand this journey that we're on, and to be able to prize it more, to appreciate that we are on a spiritual journey, even though we're not as perfect as we think we're supposed to be. And I do think we're evolving. I think all of humanity is awakening more in everyone to different degrees. And as we do, I think it'll be easier to hold this in our truth.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think that collective spiritual awakening is slowly gaining momentum in the human race's collective unconsciousness. And there are all kinds of signs of that around the world. I think the more and more people are experiencing temporary awakenings, which last for maybe a few minutes, maybe even a few seconds. Those temporary awakening experiences are becoming more common, I think. And I think more and more people are experiencing awakening in the midst of intense psychological turmoil. That's not uncommon. You know, for me as a researcher, I'm continually surprised at the number of cases I find of spiritual awakening through intense turmoil. I think globally, you know, there are signs of awakening too in terms of cultural changes. You know, I know where it seems as though there's a regression towards nationalism in America and Europe at the moment. But I think, in terms of the bigger, wider picture, there are cultural signs of increasing interconnection, increasing compassion,
right,
and
rising
so forth.
Consciousness, yes. And according to the Mayans, we're in the ninth wave of consciousness now, and we are awakening in new and better ways. And so that's why it's important, you know, for your book to be out there. And so we're getting near the end of the show, so let's just mention that it's called The Leap, The Psychology of Spiritual Awakening, and you are Steve Taylor. And what is the website?
My website is www.stephenmtaylor.com. So that's Stephen with a V, M for Mark, stephenmtaylor.com.
That's great, because I think a lot of people want to know more about what's happening to them.
Yeah.
And we're coming, I think just seeing what the struggles in the world wakes us up more to, wait a minute, I'm not that. I'm more than that.
Yeah, it's interesting that individually, psychological turmoil can wake people up. You know, it could be a diagnosis of cancer, a bereavement, a period of depression, divorce or unemployment. Sometimes that can, you know, have an awakening effect on people.
Yeah.
And I think collectively, all of the turmoil which we're going through as a species, that may also be having a collective awakening effect.
Well, let's expect awakening to be more apparent to all of us. So, Steve Taylor, it's so great to speak with you again on Energy Stew, and I really appreciate you being a guest.
Thanks, Peter. It's been a pleasure again.
Thank you. And this is Peter Roth, your host of Energy Stew at PRN.FM. I can be reached at peter@heartriver.org or 212-222-7748. I'd love to hear from you, and thank you so much for listening.